Hello and welcome to Beatdown, a musical battle royale. I'm your New Year's baby, much cuter than your last year's baby, Josh Brunell, and joining me on the panel this week. She's increased the population of tigers, planted 50 million trees in India, and grew the first flowers in space. Unfortunately, I don't have paperwork to back any of that up. She's Jennifer Lane, everybody.
I'm wonderful. Thank you.
You had a good year, 2016.
Really good year.
All the significant events attributed to you.
It got overshadowed by other things.
He helped Eleven save Mike. He sang Hallelujah on SNL, and he held the door, He's Edward Giordano, everybody. What's up, Ed?
Am I Hodor? What's going on?
And last but not least, he's a director. He's a paid protester. That's a joke. They don't exist. And he rocks an envy-inducing beard. He's Ryan Maples, everybody.
Hey, guys.
Welcome, Hello. Ryan.
Hello.
So, Ryan, you are our guest this week on the podcast. I know you because you made a short film with my friend Brian. As well as other things. Do you want to tell people a little bit about John and the Wolf?
Yeah, John and the Wolf. I directed it. Me and Brian Lerner, who wrote your theme music.
Yes.
If I'm correct.
Yeah.
We co-wrote it and he produced it. And, you know, it's an ode to music. So that's why I'm excited to be on this podcast here. I'm a music buff.
That's awesome.
To say the least. So.
And it's about a young boy who falls in love with his sexy guitar teacher,
exactly.
Sexy young guitar teacher, and kind of has an 80s metal flair to it. We talked to Ryan when he was on the show a lot about his love for 80s metal. Do you share that love for 80s metal, or was it just for the movie?
It was definitely, I had to dive into it for the movie. You know, I've Guns N' Roses was a band that, you know, I definitely love and appreciate. But I never went as deep as Brian. I think it was, you know, he's a little bit older, and that was his music when he was, you know, it's always the music that defines you when you're young, right?
Yeah,
so
exactly.
That was the music that defined him. So I was like, all right, you know, this is a new genre. I'm going to dig into it. So now I've gone a little too deep into, you know, 80s hair metal than I wanted, but it's awesome. So.
Brian kind of did that to me too, actually. We talked about that on the show where I was like, yeah, after you talk about it as passionately as you do, it's hard not to get sucked up in somebody's enthusiasm. Well, yes, welcome, Ryan. Ed, before we get too deep into things, you said we had a review you wanted to read.
Yes, I just want to thank everyone who's reviewing on iTunes, and our most recent review comes from Melek Bella, longtime listener from your Gleeful days. Thanks for staying over with us all around every week. I love the new format, and I can't wait to see where the ride takes us. So
thank you
so much for listening, and thank you for writing a review.
Yes, thank you. Please review us on iTunes. That does help other people find the show. You know, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, we find ourselves here with the singular task, and that is to proceed with a beatdown wherein we choose a theme and each of us brings a song that we think is the ultimate representation of that theme. We will present our picks, make our case, and then you, the listener, will vote on who you think brought it best and reigns supreme. In the beatdown, this week our topic is songs of 2016. That's right, songs of the year. Not just songs of the year, but if our president has his way, possibly songs of the last year. Before we can get to that, we have to talk a little bit about where we were in honor of Valentine's Day, talking about creepy love songs. last week was creepy love songs. Ed brought Shakespeare's Sister's Hormonally Beautiful Stay. Jennifer Lane delivered the sexy side of Obsession with Garbage's Number One Crush. I apparently took a dive with U2's With or Without You.
Justifiably so.
Yeah.
You just stood in front of all of us and took that hail of bullets.
I don't know why. The best part is, like, you should have seen my face. I wish I had seen my face when I realized this was a disaster.
Well, I think the realization came to me at one point that you didn't understand that although you dislike U2 more than most people we know,
everybody
dislikes that song.
I didn't know.
You just thought it was on par with, you know, U2.
You thought it was
just one of their run-of-the-mill songs. And you took it hard.
Some week I'll like bring Mysterious Ways and make a genuine case for it because I do think that's a genuinely great song. But until then, I'm just going to be the guy who hates you too. but of course, it was our guest last week who took home the very imaginary trophy with Elvis Costello's I Want You. And he, of course, took it home with these three very simple words.
I want you. 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 Want you.
And to that, I have to say, Jennifer, Ed, we suck at this. How are we so bad at our own podcast?
That's not true. That's not true. We've all done quite well at some point.
The point of the show is not to win, clearly, from my angle. But the point is like to bring four new songs to the table.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
That's the point.
So we're going to retitle the podcast Guess Beatdown on Josh Chen.
Although I will say my one and only win came at Brian's demise. So
he lost.
Is he
the only guest who lost?
Yes.
He's the only guest who's lost. Wow. That's true.
A lot of pressure here.
Too. Yeah, yeah. I'm
we'll bring him back and he will beat us on something else. Well, because our topic this week is songs of 2016, I wanted to talk about one other group that celebrated their songs of the year 2016, and that's the Grammys. The Grammys telecast was last Sunday, wherein Chance the Rapper made a big splash. Bruno Mars wore a lace ascot, and a whole bunch of old white dudes told the world they thought a sappy piano ballad was a greater production accomplishment than Beyoncé's Lemonade. Ed, I know you have some very deep thoughts about the Grammys. What did you think of the Grammys this year? And do you think there's some validity to this Grammys so white controversy?
Well, I mean, obviously there's some validity to that. I was actually expecting a Sturgill Simpson win for Album of the Year, because while I don't really characterize him as country, I characterize him more on the folk side, but there's all those Country Academy voters that have to go somewhere, and in my hypothetical mind imagine that the pop vote was split between Adele, Justin Bieber, Beyonce, and Drake, different variants divided between the four of them. So I kind of thought the country block will ride Sturgill Simpson, A Sailor's Guide to Earth, to the win, but that's not exactly what happened. In terms of I'm less upset about Album of the Year and more upset about Record of the Year. Is what is so special about Hello's production? I feel like I could make the case for Stressed Out as a better production song. Same thing with Work by Rihanna featuring Drake. So it's Song of the Year is heart my favorite song, which on every poll was last. I Took a Bill in Ibiza, which I'm like, I don't understand why it was even nominated if everyone freaking hates the song so damn much.
But yeah, I do hate that song so damn much.
Why was it nominated, Josh? I'm confuzzled. Why is it even there?
Well, I mean, I don't watch the Grammys, and I don't know as much about the music that's nominated for Grammys, but if it's anything like the movies, it has very little to do with, you know, what's actually popular. It has to do with, you know, they have these ideas of, you know, what criteria makes a song or something like that, or movie, what criteria makes a good movie, and usually it's sad and depressing and painful and awkward and all of those things.
If anything, I Took a Pill in Ibiza is there because of how popular it is. It is mm-hmm. the seventh most streamed song of all time on Spotify right now.
Wow.
Holy crap.
So if anything, it's there because of its immense popularity.
Wow. But I mean, what do you think, Ed, about these claims that, you know, Formation did not win, Formation got beat by Adele, and then even Adele gets on stage and talks about how great Lemonade was, kind of, you know, reminiscent of when Macklemore got on stage and talked about how great Kendrick Lamar is. I mean, are the Grammys out of touch? Do they not pay attention? Or is it just that voting creates this bell curve where the safest, most cuddly thing always wins?
I think there's a high proportion of older white men who are the voters of the Grammys. Like, I feel like percentage-wise, they're the majority voters, and they can make this decision. And I can imagine someone like Beyoncé's never won Album of the Year, Adele has, and if you're I never received a Grammy packet, but if I did, I'd be very excited if I did. but I can imagine you're just like, at some point you're just like over it, and you're like, okay, well, Adele won before, and like that, and like that's literally the extent of the thought.
Yeah, it's also funny to think that the other fun fact being the last time Beyoncé lost Album of the Year, it was to Beck.
I never watched the Grammys. It's something that I will maybe watch the concerts, you know, the performances afterwards. But my girlfriend's in the industry now. She's working at a record label, and she was going to all the parties that night. So I was like, okay, we put it on. And I had it on, and I kind of watched most of it. So it's the most I've ever watched of a Grammys in a long time. And what just struck me about it was they hardly give out awards.
Yeah, I think they give out nine.
Performances. Yeah.
They give out like 8 or 9 awards in three and a half hours.
It's ridiculous.
Really?
Like, where's the awards here? And yeah, it's like next up, another performance. And but I did Tribe Called Quest performance. Was amazing.
That was pretty great.
That was the best.
And just to know that's probably the last time you're ever going to see those guys together is pretty cool.
Yeah.
Tribe Called Quest. It is funny, true. I was listening to this thing on NPR where they were talking about how, they only give away 8 awards in the telecast. And there's like 4 that they give away all the time, like album, record, song, and best new artist. They always give.
Those are the big 4.
And then the other 4, they can kind of slot in and out. And so when Beyonce won for best adult contemporary
urban contemporary.
Yes.
It was essentially like Grammy experts saw that and went, well, that's the last one she's going to get tonight because they wanted to make sure she got something. So they slotted in this obscure category no one knows about.
Yeah.
It's a very interesting thing. Well, you know, the Grammys, I think, also were an interesting kind of message to me in that because we were doing Songs of 2016, it was so hard for me to find people to be guests on the show that actually listened to music that came out in 2016.
Well, not they did without their knowing.
Without their knowing, and are they feeling and people weren't forming a connection to the songs of 2016. So I wanted to ask you, Ryan, because you do. How do you discover new music in an age kind of post radio?
Yeah. It's Spotify is, you know, I'm on Spotify all day long and I'm really impressed. This is not a commercial for them at all, but maybe you can get them as a sponsor, but I'm really impressed.
Wouldn't that be the dream?
I'm really impressed with their algorithm. Like they have the Discover Weekly and now they have like a Discover Daily almost.
Yeah, those are great playlists.
I mean, almost every time I'm like pulling some new artists that I never came across. And so that's worked really well. I would say the radio station here in Los Angeles, KCRW, I get a lot of stuff from that. And then, you know, I check out, you know, Pitchfork or Stereo Gum, and that's kind of where I'm sourcing my music. But it's not from the radio, really.
Yeah. So. Ed, where do you find your new stuff?
I guess all over the place. Like, there's like a bunch of podcasts I listen to that are about music. NPR All Songs Considered, Billboard Pop Shop, Billboard Must Hear. Those for sure I listen to. And then like Spotify, Discover, as you guys discussed. And there's Spectrum Pulse on YouTube, which is just like another chart show. So yeah, just like listening to lots of stats about music gets me hype.
That's true. Yeah, I get a lot of my stuff from Sound Opinions, 2 rock critics out of Chicago. So I tend to know a lot about Chicago music. But I like those guys a lot. There's an episode from last year that I'm on, which I'm really proud of. So that one, yeah, the Discover playlists on Spotify are a big thing. I'm a big fan of a YouTube spiral. Like you just pick up some song and you're like the other day, or it was last year when the song that I'm talking about today, I was listening to that and then auto played up next was Waiting for the Magic by Honeyblood. And I'm like, never even heard of that. And now I love Honeyblood. And then that one ends and YouTube is kind of like, hey, here's another song that kind of sounds like Honeyblood. And because it's like there's a visual representation, I kind of get deeper into it. And you can just let these things roll. So that's a big one for me is kind of a YouTube spiral. And then I'm a big fan of opening bands. When I go to a concert, I always try to check out the opening bands. About 50% of, maybe 40% of the time, you'll find something that's amazing. And because you saw it live, you have this just like physical connection to it. Where like when we went to see Frank Turner and the Weaker Thans opened up, I think it was technically John Samson, but it was just like, oh, this is so unique. Like, and now, you know, it's, I'm not in love with him, but I saw him live once. And so we have a real deep connection in some way. Jennifer, how do you find new music or do you even
Well, it's funny. All? I mean, I used to just pick up anything I could find like in a clearance bin and just listen to it and just discover some fun stuff that way. But now it's a lot of it comes from Josh. He'll just start sending me YouTube videos throughout the day. But I do listen to KCRW every now and then. Problem is this year I became really obsessed with podcasts. So when I'm driving into work, because each one's, you know, about, you know, 30 to 60 minutes. So I either listen to one or two a day. And then I listen to them at work. So I think that's been my biggest downfall in 2016. I think I've just been trying to distract myself from outside influences and just in, you know, keep my sanity that way.
Yeah. But there's one of my favorite quotes ever, though, is the last thing Henry Rollins says in Get on the Van, which is an amazing book about all of his touring with Black Flag. If you're a nerd, you were like, that sounds fun. It's so fun. But the last thing he says in the book is, I'm not an elitist, but I can't forget what I know. And it's him describing why, like, modern music doesn't affect him the way it did when he was younger. And it isn't so much that, like, music today is any better or worse than it ever was. It's just that when you have 20 years of music consumption behind you, mm-hmm. a band, like, the 1975 is a perfectly good band. But when I listen to him, I have a deeper connection to the 10 bands that they're drawing from than I will ever have to the 1975. But if I heard the 1975 when I was 18, they would blow my mind because I hadn't heard those mm-hmm. other 10 bands. And so it is a little harder to form deeper connections as you get further in life.
John agreed. Was on the receiving end of my rant last week about this. I was just like, I hate when people say that new music isn't as good as the past. Like, just because he's like, that doesn't mean you aren't trying hard enough. Like, there's good music. There's bad music. But there's bad music in the past. It's just fallen away.
That's a good point.
Yeah, Frank Turner, when I saw him do a Q&A once, he said, music wasn't better when you were 16. You were better when you were 16.
Yeah, you were more willing to listen to things.
Yeah, and you had more time, and you could dedicate to it. And I will say, it does make me a little sad every now and then that music has become sort of a passive experience for me. And so, like you guys talking about Spotify, which is, I think, is fantastic, but I have to think about it. So that's why I just put on Pandora when I, mm-hmm. like, I have a mood and I need to kind of fill that mood with a certain type of music or a certain sound of artist. And actually, I've discovered some really cool artists that way too.
Yeah,
I mean, I know you're not a big fan of, you know, their suggested or similar artists, but
oh, Pandora,
yeah,
because I'm like, I don't want to hear the 12 bands that you think sound like Sarah Bareilles. I probably hate them, but I do want to hear Sarah Bareilles real bad.
Right, but one click, and then you've curated, you know, you've trained your station to give you what you like, and so that's where I fall in that.
Well, we are here for a beatdown. Our theme this week is songs of 2016. And Jennifer, you came in second last Woo-hoo! Week, second to the guest. And so I'm going to turn it over to you, Jennifer. This is a real Pitchforky show this week, except for Jennifer's pick.
Except
and
for
so
me,
I'm
yes.
super excited. Tell us about your pick for the beatdown.
This week I went with Pure Pop Perfection. I went with Justin Timberlake's Can't Stop the Feeling. Because this song, I did actually seek out a lot this year for 2016, people have a lot of opinions. It's generally been, you know, lambasted as being the worst year we've ever had. For me, it was just emotionally exhausting. No matter where you fell on, you know, anywhere on, you know, politics or social issues or, you know, your favorite musicians passing away, it was just emotionally exhausting for me. And there were some great albums, and I feel, you know, bad not even mentioning the ones that I really did enjoy, but they were very little heady. So for me, I went with fun. I went with just pure escapist fun. And so this is Can't Stop the Feeling by Justin Timberlake.
I got this feeling inside my bones. It goes electric, wavy when I turn it on. Off to my city, off to my home. We're flying up, no ceiling when we in our zone. I got that sunshine in my pocket. Got that good soul in my feet. I feel that hot blood in my body when it drops. Ooh, I can't take my eyes off of it. Moving so phenomenally. Come on, lock the way we rock it. So don't stop. And under the lights when everything goes. Nowhere to hide when I'm getting you close. When we move, well, you already know. So just imagine. Nothing I can see but you when you dance.
So you can't deny that song is catchy as hell. It is super fun. Justin Timberlake was hired to do the music for DreamWorks movies Trolls, and when he started to see some of the artwork and, you know, storyboards for it, he just kind of envisioned this sort of trippy disco world, because it's very colorful and it's very lively and there's all these different, you know, bizarre creatures. So he had actually, even before he got contacted to do the movie music for Trolls, he had already reached out to his old partner, Max Martin, who did, you know, wrote and produced a lot of music for, you know, Britney Spears and NSYNC and Backstreet Boys, Katy Perry and so forth. So they were already in the talks to do something together. And so he said, you know, we didn't have a disco song for it, so we wanted to do something that was sort of a pop disco. And that's what they came up with this. And the message in the movie is a bit more pointed, but in the song itself, it's all about recognizing that, you know, happiness isn't something that you consume. It's not something that you buy or eat or get from the outside. It's something that's already in you, and you just have to, you know, have faith that it's there and then access that when you need to be happy.
That's awesome. You know,
you're looking at me like, yeah,
I hear you, but I wonder if you've ever had a cronut, because they are.
You know, I don't think I've ever had a real one.
That's true. I don't think we've ever had a real one. One of my favorite moments of last year, at the premiere, they had hired Boogie Nights, the band. They just do like disco covers all night. And then they took a break between sets, and the DJ put this song on. And seeing like every executive at DreamWorks, from the biggest executive to like the intern on my team, all dancing to this song at the same moment was pretty magical. Pretty, there was kind of a dearth of just like big goofy fun. Like, if I had to go for my favorite dance song of last year, I might even go with like Cake by the Ocean, which I think is a great freaking song. I kind of love Cake by the Ocean, but even that, it would be hard to play that for a kid, because that song is about banging and there's a lot of cursing in it. This was just fun and carefree, and I do give that a lot of credit.
Yeah, I can't get that video out of my head though. Cake by the Ocean.
Oh yeah, with the fat Jewish. Oh. Yeah, it's not a happy video.
It's a little disturbing. So yeah, and I mean, the other thing that I really love about this is like, okay, I know I've said I've never been like the biggest pop fan. I used to seek out more alternative, but my dirty little secret is disco. I love disco. I grew up listening to Earth, Wind, and Fire and the Commodores and Donna Summer. I mean, Tavares. Like, I love that music, and it just makes me feel alive. And I thought this was a great example of that. But also, you know, just a more contemporary version of that.
That's awesome. Ed, thoughts on Can't Stop the Feeling by Justin Timberlake?
I'm curious why Jen picked this song, but hearing her reason made sense. The problem I have with it is the song doesn't stand up to other Justin Timberlake songs. Like, that's like my main criticism with it. But it's like, listening to it today and before we started, it is very fun, and I kind of like it without really giving it its due diligence, and and in the year of macabre that was 2016, this is a shining ray of hope. I don't know if it would like don't quote me on this, because I don't know where I'll go in the future, but it doesn't seem like a song that I would ever pick. So, but it's fun.
I mean, Jennifer, what do you think about the claim that is most often levied against this song, that it was just Justin Timberlake trying to do Happy by Pharrell?
I'm actually okay with that. I don't think there's anything wrong with that, because, I mean, I think there needs to be music for everybody. I mean, I believe that there is music for everybody. And okay, yes. Also the parallels that, you know, Happy was for another animated feature and was, you know, played over and over and over, and is, again, you know, one of those songs you can't get out of your head, but it makes you feel good, and I don't have a problem with that at all.
It's funny, because I actually I actually disagree with that comment as well. Not your comment. I've actually always taken issue with people just saying, I think he was trying to get his happy, but only from a commercial standpoint. When I listen to this song, Happy is such a great R&B soul track. And this song is a disco track through and through, like even kind of a mid-80s Motown Jackson's disco track, to be even more specific. And so I've always thought it was just kind of people trying to take a shot at Justin Timberlake.
He did get a lot of flack, you know, over the last year or so. You know, he's been called out for several things. So, I mean, I can understand him wanting to, you know, change up his tune a little bit. And yeah, Ed, I'm sure he's got some other great songs. I've never been a huge, I mean, I kind of skipped the whole boy band thing. So, and Josh thinks I'm crazy.
Like,
I don't
like,
have a crush on him or
sexy
something.
Sexy Back as a really strong turning point in the pop music genre. And like to go from like trendsetter to Can't Stop the Feeling is a hard fall.
Interesting. Ryan, what do you think of Can't Stop the Feeling?
I mean, it's a catchy pop disco song. It's totally... It won't offend anyone, which is nice about it. I mean, in this day and age, that's like a nice thing, and it's already kind of in my head. And I have no qualms with Justin Timberlake. I think he's done some great stuff and great pop music, and I do love great pop music. And I would agree that maybe I don't think this is his best song, but it's very catchy. It's very, you know.
Yeah.
It's his best song of 2016.
Well, yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, it's not going to change the world. It just makes you feel good for a little bit.
Yeah. Well, I'll go next because I'm a little in those lines, actually. You know, when we were trying to pick songs for 2016, if somebody were to be like, give me your top five songs, it's a lot easier because you've got like that song you love and then that song that you didn't quite love, but it had a big impact, and that song that you want to tell people you love because it makes you feel a little smarter. And, you know, there's a whole kind of shape to it. But when Ryan and I were talking about what song he should pick, I said, always err on the side of what's the most personal. And if I think of the song for 2016 that I could not stop listening to, it may not be the best song of 2016, but I never got tired of Angel Olsen's Shut Up, Kiss Me.
I ain't hanging up this time.
Like that song so much. So Angel Olsen, singer-songwriter based out of Asheville, North Carolina. She got her start in Chicago. There's that Chicago connection again.
Yeah.
Chicago's kind of like the musical city of the moment, I think. Like Brooklyn was a couple years ago. Like
Portland before that.
Yeah. You know, LA's never really had a moment.
They all migrate here.
Yeah, exactly. Everybody comes here and they're like, we're going to get famous. And then they're like, no. Like, should have
stayed home.
She's had three records. 2012, she did an album called Halfway Home, which is kind of like a high lonesome folk album, which is really sweet sounding. 2014, she did an album which has one of my favorite titles ever called Burn Your Fire for No Witness, which is kind of like if you listen to Roy Orbison's greatest hits in somebody's basement on a broken speaker. It's all right. But this album in 2016 is called My Woman, and it's this amazing mix of like garage rock and spacey synth pop, and it's all based on this kind of indie rock, indie folk root in the center of it, and I just loved it. And this song was the second single after Intern, which is a really weird single, honestly. But this song is just the commitment in her vocal is so passionate. The lyrics are this kind of like begging someone who's in pain to just like shut up and kiss me and I'll make it okay. In a way, it's I the first time I listened to it, I'm like, Shut Up and Kiss Me was a song that Mary Chapin Carpenter had in the 90s, right? And her whole thing was like, you know, I love you so much, why don't you just shut up and kiss me? And this is very much like, you're feeling all this pain and you're wallowing in it. If you would just shut up and kiss me, I'll make it okay. And there's a certain like kind of solace to it that I really like. The lyrics, if I don't fix this problem, we're going to die. Like, it's a total 100% commitment to it that I find really kind of charming. And it's got that great garage rock backbeat to it. I mean, it just sounds like something that somebody wrote in 1982 with some really bad weed and some goofy roller skates, has a great roller skating music video. And it just like makes me happy. I'll put this on in the bar. I'll put this on in the car. And this song is so fun. But so I love Angel Olsen's Shut Up Kiss Me. I think this is just one of those songs that you can put on anytime, any place, and it will fit that moment. And it's so exciting and fun and passionate and silly. So I wanted to bring a big highfalutin deep statement song today, and I ended up with the one that was absolutely the most personal. Ed, have you do you have any thoughts on Angel Olsen's Shut Up Kiss Me?
Yes, you sent me this one time. You sent me Angel Olsen while I was like trapped at DMV for a so I spent some time listening to her, and I was just like, I was a kind of in, I didn't quite get it then, but listening to it more today, I was like, okay, I'm feeling this. And like, it feels like it was sort of made for you, because the chorus could practically be ripped from an ABBA song melodically. but then it has like this rock tinge to it. I'm like, oh, this like song is engineered for Josh.
That's awesome.
So yeah, it's good. I'm enjoying it. I'd be interested to hear some other upbeat numbers from her.
Yeah, she doesn't really have enough upbeat numbers if I had any complaint about her catalog. That is funny too, because I would also add to the ways in which the song is engineered for Josh the fact that like she sounds like she's only just able to sing is a very Josh trait. I like somebody who sounds like they're at 11 and they have nowhere else to go. They're giving you everything they have. Ryan, did you know this one?
You know, it was I've seen so much buzz around her for a while, and I've seen her, you know, here and there on websites, and it, but I haven't sat down and really listened to it. So, you know, you said you picked this song, and I dug it. I was like, okay, I get it. Yeah, there's definitely something unique about her, but also very familiar. Yeah. So which is great. And I'm looking forward to checking out more of her stuff. So that's a good intro song. So
yeah, it's a good intro song to definitely this record too.
Yeah, nice.
It's a good song. Jennifer, have you heard this song when I didn't put it on at the Snug on the jukebox?
Yes, I have heard it. Okay. When you sent it to me months ago. But I love this song. I think it's really great. I love that I hear like harmonies from the you know, the girl groups of the 60s almost. Like, it sounds to me like, you know, like the Ronettes or somebody like that. Like, I get that kind of 60s feel from it. But instead of being a song about, you know, unrequited love or lost love, it's a strong, confident woman in a relationship that's, you know, recognizes it has flaws, but, you know, is gonna make it work. And I just really like it a lot. It's very fun, and I like her voice. It sounds like it's gonna crack any second.
Yeah, I will say one other thing to defend this song. You know, there's always that argument, especially right now, that too many people are just picking a moment in time and just playing that, you know, like Haim, that's always my big complaint about them, or Foxygen, which picks all the moments in time and just plays them in order. But there's something to me that feels very current, even as she is hearkening back to these like garage rock days and these girl group melodies. The kind of self-empowerment in the lyric, I think, makes it really current, and kind of smashing all that stuff into it. The big anthemic kind of bridge in the middle, I think, brings a very current tone to it. So I will stand up for, as much as I would not say this is the definitive sound of 2016, but I also don't think it sounds dated. It doesn't strike me as somebody that's just a retro act.
Not dated, but it's kind of like if this had shown up in a Quentin Tarantino movie in the 90s, it would have it would have felt right at home.
Right next to Chick Havit.
Yes, exactly.
That's we should find a topic to talk about. Chick habit. That's a fun. That'd be fun.
Build it around it.
Well, that's my pick for songs of 2016. Ed, let's turn it over to you now. You went darker with this pick, literally. Let's turn it over to you, Ed, for your song for 2016 beatdown.
I chose "You Want It Darker" from Leonard Cohen's final studio album. Well, yeah, or at least, yeah, there could be more, but posthumously, which I just learned how to pronounce that word. I always said the H that you shouldn't say, apparently. And I, like, there was like a bunch of songs I was considering for this week, most of which were Lady Gaga songs, let's be frank. But but then I was like, oh, is this really my song of 2016? Like, really? So, but then I heard on NPR All Songs Considered this song, and I was like, oh, this is the song that I need to pick, so I'm gonna choose it. And what I like about it is, like, it's dark, it's mystical, and it feels like instantaneous classic. So let's take a listen to it. To "You Want It Darker."
If you are the dealer, I'm out of the game. If you are the healer, means I'm broken and lame. If thine is the glory, then mine must be the shame. You want it darker, we kill the flame. Magnified, sanctified be thy holy name. Vilified, crucified in the human frame. A million candles burning for the help that never came. You want it darker. I'm ready, my lord.
I just love that it has such strong lyrical content, and the melody is catchy even in its sparseness. Because of its sparseness, it's so catchy. So, I just love all the layers of things that are happening in here. Like, I'm on Rap Genius right now for this, and there is, like, every line is filled with different innuendo about different events in history. And what I know about Leonard Cohen as a songwriter is he takes forever to write his songs, from what I've heard in an interview with him. Like, he'll spend like years on a single song, so this doesn't surprise me that it's so good, so concise, so catchy, so deep meaning. And it as I said, it's an instant classic in my mind, this song.
It is, you know, Leonard Cohen is such an interesting story as a singer, songwriter, you know, the Canadian guy who came down. He was the contemporary with the folkies in the 60s, and, you know, Joan Baez and Janis Joplin, slept with all of them. And he was just like, what set him apart was that voice. Mm. And the fact that he could barely play the guitar, and the fact that he could barely sing, but that it didn't matter, because he had that voice. And that he tried to retire in the 90s, and then he found out that all of his money had been stolen by a business manager, so it brought him out of retirement in the 2000s to do these records. And the blessing and the curse of that is we got this one last amazing record for him before he died, which we never would have gotten if he'd kind of quote-unquote had his way. Ed, how do you know Leonard Cohen's other work, or is it really just this song?
I mean, I know everyone knows Hallelujah.
Yeah.
But outside of that, no, I don't really know him that well.
I mean, he's a truly one of the great songwriters, and Hallelujah, of course, being one of the great songs ever written. This is a really interesting pick, Ed. So what do you think, as far as, like, You Want It Darker and the lyrical content, like, what do you really think it's about? What is he talking about? What is actually becoming darker?
I think it's saying, like this, I interpret it as, like, this. Like, he talks about the Holocaust in a little bit of the song when I was going through the Rap Genius. Like this world is has forsaken you. Like the populace want darker. And so he's like, I'm ready. I'm over this. I can't stand, like, this earth isn't for me. If this is the earth that we're headed towards.
Interesting.
That's how I interpret it. This could be very wrong, though.
That's wild. Ryan, what's your history with Leonard Cohen?
You know, I've barely scratched the surface for Leonard Cohen, and it's been one of those. I mean, one of my favorite bands is The National, and everyone's like, oh, he's got a Leonard Cohen type voice.
Yeah,
and
totally.
Then I'm like, you listen to this, and it's like, he doesn't even compare. Leonard Cohen's voice is just, I guess it's, you know, 70 years of drinking whiskey and cigarettes has
pretty
made
much,
this
yeah.
voice. It's just so incredible. But I definitely got to go deeper, which I like about this pick is it's a little similar to, you know, David Bowie's album. He had the Black mm-hmm. Star, which is, I mean, it's the same thing. These two guys almost know they're coming to the end.
Yeah.
And there's just... something you can't write about without that wisdom of living life, and you hear it in his voice in those lyrics.
You really do, yeah. I mean, yeah. Cohen, his voice changed over the years, but not that much.
Yeah.
And he really just got better at knowing how to use it more than anything.
Yeah, I really like this. It's kind of, but it is bittersweet listening to the lyrics. Like, did he know he was dying, yeah. or is it just, you know, as you get later in the years in your life, you assume you're going to be dying. But yeah, I mean, it really is. It's a lovely song. And it's funny because when his voice starts, it's sometimes a little jarring because it's not as melodic and smooth as other artists, but then you just can't stop listening.
For sure. Yeah.
He has such a commanding power.
Yeah, I was thinking that as I was listening to it, that it's like he's like this like spiritual narrator over the song, over the really field good. Of the song, mm-hmm. and I like that angling of it.
The other great thing about this period of Leonard Cohen's career, like this last three or four records before he died, you listen to his old records, the records that like Hallelujah came on, and the running joke you always hear about Leonard Cohen is Hallelujah is such a good song that the only person who ever screwed it up was Leonard Cohen, because he used to way overproduce those albums in the 70s, and his version of Hallelujah, his original version, is actually pretty terrible. And then when he came out of retirement, he did a record with Phil Spector, for God's sake, like all of these way overproduced things. And when he came out of retirement, his son took over production. I believe it was his son took over production of all the records and was really like, I know how to make you sound good. And so these new records sound the way Leonard Cohen should sound. And as far as this one, this album, which is also called You Want It Darker. I'm totally selling Ed's pick right now. As far as You Want It Darker, this album, I think, really, like, they got it. Like, they nailed this one. And then if you do want to dip into Leonard Cohen's work, there's obviously his greatest hits. You know, the songs of Leonard Cohen and are pretty great. But he did a live album, Live in London, a couple years ago. And that's, like, his voice is as good as it ever was in his life. All the songs have been kind of remixed and remastered with a live band, and you can just see how happy everyone is to be there. And he's finally kind of like, oh, this is how I was supposed to sound all this time doing 40-year-old songs. He really kind of perfected it here right before the end. So in that way, you know, it's terrible that he died, but it's also kind of beautiful that we got like one last great renaissance with Leonard Cohen before he had to go. So that's why my pick this week is You Want It Darker by and I think this is a great choice. I'm really impressed that you went with this one.
That's why I claimed it so early. I was like, I'm going to text Josh right now. He can't even think about this song.
You did. It was like an hour after we chose last week. You went with this song. Well, let's turn it over to our guest for one last song in our 2016 beatdown. Ryan, what did you bring for this week?
Well, I picked Bon Iver 22 Over Soon, or as I used to call him for so long, Bon Iver. but yeah, I just thought it's, you know, in this day and age, we're in this really digital era, you know, everything's digitally made, and it's almost this sort of EDM is so huge and electronic music. And here you got this guy who made his name doing, you know, playing a guitar in a cabin is the classic kind of story with him. And he was like this folk guy. And here he comes out after 5 years when he hasn't done anything with this just completely, there's samples in it. It's completely, you know, he invented a new machine for this make new sound effects. It's completely digital, but he's still there in it. And it's I think reinvention is very hard to do right with music, because you can keep on making the same album over and over, but to reinvent yourself but still be there, and the sound is really good. So this is the opening track from that album, which I think is a great album, and it really sets a tone. And when I first heard it, I was like, wow, but I was hooked, and it was something that felt really fresh, really new, which I think is it's hard to get really original music, and I think this kind of at least, you know, gets there with this artist. So
let's take a listen to 22 Over Too Soon. And the O's are infinity size.
His titling of the tracks is insane.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where you gonna look for confirmation? And if it's ever gonna happen? So as I'm standing at the station,
when you told me you were doing Bon Iver, I have to admit there was that little like angry 14-year-old in my head that was like, oh, Bon Iver, king of the hipster mustache. And then I put this on and this record sounds like Bon Iver and like nothing else. And I was really struck, like he took his bedroom recording style, which on the first album was, you know, definitive. On the second album was his bedroom recording plus Michael McDonald. And then this album, which is like a full-on folktronica, like experimental noise thing, and yet still sounds like him. And this was really striking. I kind of had cast it off because I disliked the last two so much, and I was really struck by what he did here. It's fascinating.
Yeah, it's incredible. You know, and it is, yeah, definitely the pitchforky, you know, hipster pick. And I was weighing between Chance the Rapper, you know, something really lighthearted and positive, mm-hmm. and you know, even Kanye West, who's a collaborator with him. But I thought this was a great, you know, source of reinvention, something that is, yeah, really striking, you know, and his lyrics are so oblique. And I'm, you know, I've heard Marc Maron say he's not a lyrics guy. He's more of a, you know, rhythm and melody guy. And I'm a little bit more, you know, less a lyrics guy, and just the feel of the music. And, you know, you put that on and you're instantly kind of in it. And, I was just really, really impressed with it.
There's a lot going on in this song, and yet it does kind of come back to that "it might be over soon" kind of refrain, which gets reinvented over and over in the course of the song. He sings it. It comes in the sample. Like, it's interesting. I find it fascinating when artists that use samples also perform the sample themselves, kind of in a way. Like, it isn't like the classic P. Diddy where it's like, and now I hit this part on the song and I push the button on the keyboard, which plays the background vocal. Like, he's really kind of like weaving that in and out of what he's doing as well.
Yeah. And, you know, I think, you know, it is what I also picked this song was, it's a little bit indicative of 2016. I mean, hip hop is huge. It's massive. And he actually said he's influenced by hip hop. He's influenced by the digital era. And he's like, yeah, you know, you never thought you can sample music, and now that has just become the norm. And yeah, but he took an old, you know, jazz soul singer for that sample, and then, like you said, he samples his own voice. He distorts his own voice so much in it. And you know, I read that I guess he went on a kind of a finding himself trip to Greece, and he didn't find himself, and it was miserable, and he had a terrible time, and he's like, why am I in Greece? It's very expensive. And then he's like, I wish this was over soon. And he recorded that sample like on this trip. He's like, wow, I just need to get out of here. I want this to be over soon. And then that was the piece that built the whole album for him, because I think he's feeling a lot of pressure to reinvent his sound. And then the last thing I would argue why this song is pretty amazing, was the sax, the saxophone, the saxophone group that he uses on this. I don't know if we could cuss on this.
Oh, go ahead. Yeah, yeah.
But he uses, it's the Sad Sax of Shit is the group that he uses for that, you know, throughout the album, which
but
is pretty,
like,
impressive.
One of the things that turned me off about the last record was the saxophone.
Sure.
And yeah, when I saw the saxophone, when I heard it come in on this song, I'm like, oh, I actually really like this.
You kind
like,
of figured it out, right?
Yeah, like on the last album, it just kind of felt like, I'm going to take my sappy and then I'm going to throw a saxophone on top of it.
Yeah.
You know, it's like when Paramore had Michael Bolton on their last record, it was like, okay. Yeah. But like here, when the saxophone comes in on this song, it was kind of like, it kind of grounds you because the song is so weird.
Yeah.
And then this smooth sax comes in and it kind of like brings you home in a way.
Yeah. Yeah.
I really like it.
Who would have ever thought that the saxophone was the instrument that is the one instrument yes, you're gravitating towards in a song? But it works today, which is pretty incredible. So.
That's really awesome. Ed, do you know anything about Bon Iver? Have you heard this song before?
Like when I was in college and I thought it was cool, I thought a little bit, but I never really like dug deep. But I do really, really love Fall Creek Boys Choir because I love James Blake.
Mm-hmm.
So that to me is like my quintessential Bon Iver song, which is probably a very silly way to think about it. But honestly, I don't like if this is how 22 Million sounds, it doesn't sound like that far of a stretch from Fall Creek Boys Choir.
Yeah, I mean, they both have those Folktronica roots, which I think is, you know, what has allowed Bon Iver to kind of evolve, was bringing in Folktronica, which was a word I learned this morning, but makes a lot of sense.
I was gonna say, I've never heard that described before, but if you had just said that before even listening to this, I would be like, oh, of course that's what it is.
Speaking of Folktronica, that's when I, like, in 2009, pre 50 Shades of Grey, Ellie Goulding, she was like listed as like the first.
Yes.
And I loved her. I love Starry Eyed. So mm-hmm. Just want to talk about Folktronica.
Yeah. I mean, as far as Folktronica, like you get like James Blake tends to get lumped into there. Imogen Heap gets placed mm-hmm. in that bucket a lot. The Arab Strap, people like yeah. that have been around for a long time.
Diane Vickers.
Yeah, yeah, that's a good one. And yet this, I don't know. There's something about this that I found kind of rising above it. I think because it's so experimental, like it isn't like just a folk band that put a backbeat behind it or like, you know, James Blake at kind of his worst moments is just like, I'm going to yodel over some distortion. At his best moments, he's pretty great. But
I was going to say, we saw him. I thought he was fantastic.
Yeah,
we were also
amazing
sitting
live
outside at night in the cemetery, and it was like the most perfect setting for it.
Yeah, that was a pretty great show at James Blake at the Hollywood Forever Cemetery. We were about as far as you could get from the stage, and yet I still felt punished by the bass.
Wow.
At that
yeah.
show. It was
yeah.
pretty
oh,
amazing.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I love James Blake as well. And yeah, when they collaborate, I mean, there's definitely, you mm-hmm. know, an influence not there because I think he worked with them and then, you know, it definitely came across. But I think you're right. There's an authenticity mm-hmm. a little bit to it. So.
Well, there you go. That's Ryan's pick this week. Songs for 2016, which was Bon Iver's 22 Over Soon. Before we move on to summations, which we're going to do here in a second, I did want to ask the group, why did no one pick Beyoncé's Formation?
Mm.
And I guess I can start because I'm the one asking the question, and I don't want to sound, I don't mean that in an accusatory way. I'm genuinely curious why no one would have picked what may or may not have been a slam dunk to winning the episode. I know for me, I don't feel like there's anything left to say about it. It would have just been like, my pick is Formation. Then we would have listened to it. And then we all would have went, it's pretty great. I also don't know if I have the authority as a white male in 2017 to really make a case for Beyoncé's Formation.
Well,
Jennifer?
You should be on the Grammy voting board. There you go.
But if it was just a check mark on a piece of paper, I absolutely would have picked Beyoncé's yes. Formation.
Honestly, I assumed Ed was going to pick this. So I just went with something different.
That's Ed, right. Why did you not go with Beyoncé's Formation?
I mean, this is going to sound bad, but I don't like the melody in Formation enough to defend it.
So, but nothing on Lemonade. Like you felt that the Leonard Cohen song was more definitive than
Formation. Oh, and the reason I didn't choose anything from Lemonade is because I'm like, a Spotify stan, so you mess with Spotify, you mess with me.
Oh, that's right, because Lemonade's not on Spotify.
I'm looking at you, Taylor Swift.
That's interesting. I mean, yes, I suppose if you were to go that way, like if you were to take all of Lemonade, mm-hmm. I suppose I could talk about You Hurt Yourself, which is probably my favorite song.
Well, yeah, that's my favorite song. Don't Hurt Yourself or Daddy Lessons. That's where it's at.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Or Freedom.
And Ryan, same question to you also, because you're the person I know who likes Life of Pablo, and I don't get that record at all. For some reason, I don't understand Life of Pablo.
Ultralight Beam is classic.
Well, yeah, Ultralight Beam was like number one, I think, on Pitchfork's Song of the Year, where the three of us were all in the top 10, actually. What do you think, Ryan?
Of Life of Pablo? Yeah. I was going to pick Ultralight Beam. I did think, I was like, wow, this is, you know, Kanye's career, you know, rise and fall over this year was very, you know, parallel 2016 in some ways. And that album was, you know, of the digital era, it's like never ending. He kept on adding and adding songs to it. So it was the ultimate Spotify digital playlist because it never ended. And then Ultralight Beam also featured Chance the Rapper. It was his kind of breakout performance. And then which he then put out, I think, a better album than Pablo. But I do think there's some really awesome gems in Pablo. But
To me, it's just so disjointed. I have a hard time wrapping my head around it. Like, if you were to ask me to name, like, if you were to ask me how to describe the record, I would be like, well, Ultralight Beam is kind of like a gospel hip hop thing, and then there's a bunch of other stuff. And for a whole record, that's kind of hard to say. We're usually like Kanye. My favorite of all his records is 808s, because I just think it's such a masterpiece. But you know, at least every record has a point. Like every record has a very specific direction. And Pablo's the one where I'm like, I don't know what to say.
Yeah, it's definitely like that. Yeah, it starts out, it seems like he had the intention of gospel, and then it just goes all these different directions. And yeah, it is definitely, you know, I think of a playlist kind of album where you're pulling the favorite tracks from it. You're not listening straight through.
Yeah. But it's true what you say, how it's kind of the ultimate statement of music today, because he released it and then he released it again and then he kept tweaking it. And he was able to, like, because it's Spotify and you're just uploading, you're not selling people CDs that they'd have to take back. He can just keep uploading new files to Spotify and they just keep updating as he goes.
It may never be done.
Yeah, exactly. It's the apocalypse now of hip hop records.
Wow.
Well, let's wrap it up. We're going to go around for final statements about everybody's songs. This is where you will make one last case to the listeners on why your song is the best song tonight on the show this week of 2016. Tell the listeners why they should vote for you. Feel free to take the gloves off, and also tell the listeners why everyone else's songs were big piles of steaming garbage that didn't belong in 2016 or any year. Jennifer.
Well, you know that's not going to happen.
I know, but I have to say
honestly, there's been very few songs that any of us in or our guests have brought up that I haven't at least had some connection to, or
with or without you, my YouTube.
Yeah, that was just. Yeah, I don't know what you were thinking about that one, but you know, I mean, I really enjoy all of the songs presented this week. I do feel that. You know, some you maybe have to be in the right mind space or emotional space to take in. Can't Stop the Feeling is nothing like that. It's just joy. It's energy. It's movement. It's escapism. And so that was my go-to song when I needed, you know, when I hit that 3:30 wall on a Thursday and I have got a couple more hours ahead of me. And it gets you going, gets you moving, and definitely made me happy.
Thank you. That's Jennifer's pick for this week. I am up next, making my final case for Angel Olsen's Shut Up Kiss Me. You know, I just think it's the song I don't get tired of. I don't think you will get tired of it either. I think it's the song that, is just fun to listen to. It is both unique and a little bit challenging in the way it's designed. It's not simple, but it is not complicated either. And I think it's just super fun. And I think the entire message of, like, just shut up and I'll make it okay. Just like, it was a nice blanket for me to wrap myself around, and was a really beautiful kind of, that's what I needed in 2016 a lot of the time, was that sentiment.
To be
luckily,
told to shut up.
And yes.
It's going to be okay.
Luckily, I had Jennifer here to help me through what was a very complicated year, is how I'll describe that. I love Shut Up, Kiss Me. Of all four songs, I would say it's just the one that makes you want to run around, that you want to put on a bar, put on at the house when things are slow. You want to put it on. And I don't think I can't get tired of it. I'm almost on the edge with Can't Stop the Feeling, but then they do play it at my work constantly. So,
and there's so many different music videos for it. So
that's also true.
Yes.
I think it's just entirely without artifice, and I think it's fantastic. Ed, over to you. Make one final case for Leonard Cohen's You Want It Darker.
I think of the four songs presented here today, only one of which could potentially be a hymn in a futuristic religion, and that would be mine. So that is what that sounds really, anyways, I think You Want It Darker is classic. It's dark, it's a strong choice, and yeah, I think it's actually kind of indicative of 2016 in many ways. So there you go.
And last but not least, Ryan, final statements on your pick for this week, Bon Iver's 22 Over Soon.
I mean, I think, you know, there was so much in 2016 for a lot of people that they weren't happy with, and that they, a lot of celebrities dying, all these, you know, things people weren't too stoked about. And, you know, it's nice to hear someone say it'll be over soon, know, repeatedly. And so there's, and then the album is, you know, it's dark, but it's also, you know, comforting, and the song's comforting in that way. And I'll leave it with this. I think it might be the only song on today's challenge that has a saxophone. So,
yeah.
I think that's probably true. We'll give you that one.
It does have kind of a pretty hopeful
nature
to it. There
could be Can't Stop the Feeling.
There might be one buried on Can't Stop the Feeling. Well, now, dear listeners, it is up for you to vote on which of our songs is the best song of 2016 that you heard this week. You can vote on Twitter by tweeting us at BeatdownPod. You can email us at beatdownpodcast@gmail.com. And you can tell us on Facebook at facebook.com/beatdownpodcast and let us know what you think is the ultimate song of 2016. And it goes without saying, you'll want to tell us all of the many songs we forgot to mention. So many songs we weren't able to talk about, but you know, there was
long year.
It was you know, within a year, you got to pick the one that that meant the most to you. I think we will be back next week when our theme will be songs from movies in honor of the Oscars telecast. Ryan, if people want to follow you on the lines, where should they go?
Go to Twitter, Ryan_Maples. You'll find me there.
All right. And you're on the Instagram as well.
Instagram, yes.
Yes.
Ryan Maples.
Jennifer, if people want to follow you on social media, where should they go?
Instagram and Twitter, Jenny B. Creative.
And you, Ed.
I'm at Edward Giordano everywhere.
And I am at Josh Burnell everywhere. BURNELL. And that's it for us. We'll talk to y'all next week. Good night, everyone.
Good night.
Good night.
Beatdown is a production of us and is recorded in Studio O, the office attached to our garage. Our theme song is Optimism by the Numbers by Brian Lerner, and thanks to him for letting us use it. If you enjoyed this podcast, please leave a review on iTunes. It helps others find the show and spreads the word that I can go on way too long about anything when given the opportunity. The music clips we discuss in this podcast are used in compliance with the U.S. Copyright Act Fair Use Exemption for criticism and commentary. If you want to listen to the songs we talked about this week in their entirety, visit us on Twitter at BeatdownPod, online at BeatdownPodcast.com, and on Facebook at Facebook.com/BeatdownPodcast.